track. Welcome in to Rover Sports of Sports Talk here. The whole crew's in the house. The band is back together. Dr. Stephen Lewis, Coach Josh Dacey, Spencer G, Colin Newby behind the glass, and breaking news, the Phillies have just executed a deal with 15 minutes left in the trade deadline. Dr. Lewis, tell us about that.
Yeah, so the Phillies, first of all, overall today, it's clear that the Phillies are going all in. They spent a lot of money in the offseason with the hopes of making their first playoffs since 2011, bring in Kyle Schwarber and Nick Castellanos, as you know. Of course, the big contract with Bryce Harper. But today, the Phillies are really putting their cards on the table. They just traded for Noah Syndergaard and gave up Mickey Moniak and another prospect for him. In addition, they bring in a center fielder, Brandon Marsh, is it?
Yeah, Brandon Marsh.
Brandon Marsh, who's a left-handed hitting center fielder who will be the starting center fielder and with some platooning with Matt Buehrling, I assume. And then, of course, they bring back Robertson.
Yeah, Dave Robertson.
Dave Robertson, who they didn't get much out of, but who is having a spectacular season, and they gave up for him one of the top prospects, one of their top 100 prospects in baseball, a catcher, which the Phillies, you know, Spencer, are loaded in catcher. Of course, they have JT Realmuto, they have Garrett Stubbs, and of course, they have Rafael Marchand in the minor leagues, but Ohapi was a Logan Ohapi, a very promising prospect. But the Phillies gave up a lot. They gave up an absolute lot. They gave up a Logan Ohap, which was deemed as a untouchable prospect by this organization not too long ago. Also, they gave up Ben Brown, who? Another untouchable that was just a couple days ago, 6'6" guy, hard thrower. Dave Dombrowski's going in, guys, and he believes this team can contend for a World Series.
So Steve, well, I'm very happy with the Syndergaard signing because, kind of like Zach Wheeler, I was actually one that actually didn't really love the Zach Wheeler signing because he was hurt on the Mets and because he was kind of, you know, his best years were not before he came to the Phillies, and then he turned into one of the greatest signings in this franchise's history, being a Cy Young. But now this pitching staff is so versatile because that third overall spot in the starting lineup for pitching, you're going to have Nola and you're going to have Wheeler, and now it's a battle between Ranger. Four's going to be up there. And even if Eflin comes back healthy, now Eflin's an added bonus to the staff. Kyle Gibson. So last year, the trade of Spencer Howard for Kyle Gibson is exactly like Moniak for Thor. And in terms of Marsh, Brandon Marsh, I think there's a ton of options now to put in center field. I mean, I guess Schwarber is still
no. Marsh is going to be the center fielder. Marsh is the center fielder for this team, and this talent, Spencer's going to love him. It's kind of like an Aaron Rowland kind of guy. He'll go into the wall for you. He's a gritty player, and you know, he's had some struggles with striking out, but the Phillies are going to work with him. But
he's a young player too, Doc. Let's not forget
he's a very young player.
Does he have power potential?
No, he's a guy that's just going to get on base.
He's going to get on base.
He's fast. He can run and steal bases.
And let's not get overexcited with Noah Syndergaard. Maybe Noah Syndergaard 5 years ago would have been exciting. Noah Syndergaard now is basically, let's not have a bullpen game. Having a bullpen game like we're going to have tonight is in August should not happen.
So, I have a lot high. He's only 29 years old. This is Syndergaard,
and
also
a lot of wear and tear.
Also, Wheeler was the same age when the Phillies got Wheeler. You look at Kyle Gibson. Kyle Gibson is old. He's like pushing 36, 37. And I believe in Syndergaard massively. I expect Syndergaard to actually compete with a young pitcher like Suarez. I really do.
Yeah. Well, I would say that listening to Dave Dombrowski, he understands that Syndergaard used to be a real flamethrower, but now he's pitching in the mid. If somebody has their beeper on or we're hearing some binging, maybe we can turn that off. But in any event, getting back to Syndergaard there, he did have Tommy John surgery on his pitching arm, obviously. So that is something, even though he's 29, that's something you have to watch out for. Also, the Angels have been really babying him. They had Shotani, and they also so they had him in a six-pitcher rotation in babying him because of his Tommy John. And
Right now, they're going to be throwing him into a five-man rotation. You'll be able to get Falter out of the starting lineup, and that's going to be a positive. But and I remember Noah, you know, was great, you know, great pitcher for the Mets, and you just don't know. But he is a hardworking guy. He's only 29, and they only signed him for the rest of the year. But he probably has incentive to play well and to extend the contract like anybody.
Again, Doc, it's a contract year, and now all of a sudden he's back on the East Coast. He's familiar with it. He's also joining a former teammate in Zach Wheeler. Ironically, if you look at that Mets pitching staff, it could have been a couple years ago. DeGrom, Syndergaard, and Wheeler, that was phenomenal. Like, that was a great 1-2-3 punch, but none of them could stay healthy. I think the addition of Syndergaard is going to be huge. You know, I don't think the Phillies, like much like Dr. Lewis said, we don't have to go to a bullpen game like we are tonight, which is something I don't like to play with. You know, obviously, you'll never have a bullpen game in the playoffs, okay? Did they get better today? Yes, they did. I think Brandon Marsh is definitely an upgrade. Did you have to give up Logan O'Hoppe? Yeah. But again, you know what, Doc? How many years have we gone through? Phillies have all these great prospects. And what are these great? How many great? For every Alec Baum, how many have been a Mickey Moniak or a Adam Haseley or Sisto Sanchez where they just don't pan out? Don Brown.
Mayberry. You
know? So here's the thing, though.
You're absolutely right, Josh.
Here's the thing, guys, that you have to realize. Going into the trade deadline, the Phillies had three needs. They needed a relief pitcher. They needed a starting pitcher, and they needed a center fielder. And they needed to rid themselves of Odubel Herrera and Jervis Familia. So Dave Dombrowski did all that today. He got rid of the dead weight on his team in Herrera and Familia, and he solidified a center field position, which is an upgrade from what we have right now, clearly, defensively. Odubel Herrera was below average and did not have a baseball IQ at all, zero. And Familia was just... I mean, that was trash.
He was just terrible.
He was just terrible. Yeah. And they got a starting pitcher here, so we don't have bullpen games. So don't expect the world from Syndergaard. I mean, you know, he's back on the East Coast, and he's back with his former teammate. I think those are all pluses, and I agree with you. He may have a rejuvenation of his career, hopefully. But this team is significantly better right now than they were when we woke up this morning.
Well, I do have a question, I guess, for Steve Lewis, our baseball expert. My question to you, Steve, is what do you think about the package that the Padres gave for superstar, for Soto? Well, could the Phillies have possibly contended with that package?
So that's a great question, because the Phillies' top three pitching prospects are Painter, right? McGarry and
Abel.
And McGarry and what?
McAble.
So they, McAble, right. They kept those three, number one. So they would have to have rid themselves of that plus. But, and keep in mind one other thing before we talk about that trade. The Phillies are also, what we're not talking about, it's addition to a trade, is you got the league MVP coming back, and you got your starting second baseman coming back. So there's significant, those three additions plus the two that we just talked, the two injured players are coming back. This team's been winning without them. This is a tremendous day. As far as that trade, the Padres are just going crazy all in. This is one of the biggest trades in the history of baseball, obviously. Absolutely. And to move that kind of talent for one of the premier players in baseball right now at age 23, a guy that we talked about, Bruce, that strikes out at a significantly less rate, unheard of rate, than he walks. The guy knows how to get on base. He's got power, and he's just a great overall baseball player. The Padres, with this talent right now, are going all in, and they got Josh Bell to play first base in addition to that. It was a great trade for the Padres. The Padres may be too far to come back to the Dodgers right now. They're too to win that division, but they're certainly a contender for the World Series.
You know what? I believe actually the power in this league, Josh, is in the NL. I mean, you have the Dodgers.
Yep.
The New York Mets have actually been like really just an unbelievable season from the Mets this year the Braves.
I got to be honest with you, buddy. I think the San Diego Padres lineup is ridiculous. You have Tatis, okay? You've got Machado. I mean, you got Vault. Now you're adding Bell. You're also adding Soto. I mean, and then you got a great pitching staff, Doc. This is a team that's like, you know what? They realized they had to up the ante, because every year, guess what the Dodgers do? They go out and they up the ante and get the next best player, and they're always willing to spend money. They've never won a World Series. San Diego's only been to the World Series twice. The last time they were there was 1983. They're going all in. They really are.
Yeah, you definitely got to appreciate that. And if you look at the Phillies, you know, I was listening to a lot of baseball. It's certainly, we're all getting into it. You look at Milwaukee and St. Louis and the Phillies. And if you hold those three teams up to the light, they're so identical with respect to everything, including their record, the amount of runs, and the teams. St. Louis did improve a little bit. So it's going to be exciting right down the stretch. And I believe two of those three teams will make the wild card.
So the Brewers and Cards are battling it out.
They're battling out with the Phillies. It looks like San Diego, like you said, people think they're just going to really transcend. They're much better than the three teams I mentioned. And obviously the Dodgers and the Mets, you know, the Mets are having a great year. They just keep winning. And the idea that somebody's going to overtake the Mets, I think, is...
And DeGrom's coming back tonight, so...
is unlikely.
So now for the playoffs. So Derek Hall to get shuffled down in this mix, because now Schwarber will be the DH, and they don't expect Derek to be taking big-time at-bats in postseason or very important games.
No, he'll be a right-handed bat off the bench. Castellanos will go back to the DH. Schwarber will stay in left field, but certainly Derek Hall will be a right-handed bat. I mean, if you're an opposing manager, knowing that you got this guy to pinch hit in a situation, I mean,
so who'll be there? Are you talking when Harper comes back to play right field?
Yeah, that's what Spencer.
So let's talk about that. It's a sports medicine news. The pins came out of the thumb, so that's really good, and that means he can start rehabbing more aggressively. And I think most hand surgeons predict that early September, Harper will be back, and he'll be ready to play for that stretch run. And obviously, it's very easy to play. As you know, Josh, you had a thumb injury, I believe. Almost.
Yeah, I did.
So you were able to wear a brace, and you're able to play, I think, softball and all that. So presumably by early September, he'll be wearing a brace or a really good taping, and he'll be able to be the old Bryce Harper. The elbow seems to have responded great to the PRP. And Segura is supposed to be back this week. So just a lot of things to be happy about. Also, just getting rid of Odubel Herrera
and his
problems, his social problems. Just cleansing him is certainly a good thing. And Familia was just horrible. You know, just watching him. That guy, I remember he let up, you know, they had an 8-2 lead, and I think he let up five runs.
He's terrible.
So it seems that Dombrowski also is really big on this guy, Marsh. And I listened to the press conference, and he's pretty easy to listen to. He said that there are many center fielding prospects that came across his desk, and this guy is a tremendous center fielder. So you want to be really solid up the middle, and they took it because they want to, for the stretch run, they want to have, you know, their outfield has been shaky, to say the least. But if you have this guy, Morris, in there, and you also subject him to really good hitting coaches, they're watching things. He didn't really say the details, but he said there's certain things he's doing at the plate that are very correctable. And sometimes you give a guy a fresh start. You even look at Bohm. Look how he improved from one year to the other with good hitting instruction. So I'm just really excited. Like, I can't wait. I just feel bad tonight. It's a bullpen game against the Braves. So I just hope we're just not. And I guess we'll have updates, Colin, as we go along.
They're probably going to get killed.
Nah. No.
Nick Nelson is pitching tonight.
Yeah, he's a good pitcher. Doc, he's a good pitcher.
Doc, the one thing I like about Marsh is this. Let me tell you, he's not in. We've done enough without him so far that we have guys like Verlin. Okay, we can mix and match. We have other guys that can play in the outfield right now to kind of get him, you know, get him some extra bats.
Get his feet wet.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And build with it. So I mean,
I think Verlin is in center field tonight, and I believe our boy Nick is in right field. As far as I heard,
which is fine. And then Segura is supposed to be back on Thursday.
So that's what I heard.
So, Josh, I wanted to ask you this question. So for the playoffs, Segura's at second, right?
Yes.
Then who are you putting at short? Are you going to start the vet, Didi, or are you putting the kid in there, Bryce?
You know, Spencer, that's a great question. I had this conversation a little earlier. I like Bryson, okay? I really do. I think he's a guy you got to ride with. Now people will tell me experience in the playoffs, you go with Didi. But Didi's not hitting. I mean, you know, he made a phenomenal play the other night against Pittsburgh, but... Yeah. You know, I'm riding with the kid. I really am. I love what Bryson can do. Yes, he's not just barely. What is he at? Just barely 200, Doc.
No question. But his at bats are great at bats. Yeah. I mean, he's hitting
the
ball with purpose.
He's a lefty. Didi is what?
A lefty too.
So two lefties. So there's not. If they were different, then you could think they could platoon
him. Didi is a tremendous defender. Didi
is, you know. So is Scott.
He's also weak. You know, I love Didi a lot. He's a quality person, but he tends to run out of gas near the end of the year. So I love putting the young kid in there, And maybe using DJ just to spell him on certain
and
games.
Guess what? This kid's your future, so you got to get it. You got to make him a part of this run. Yeah, that's how I see it. Now, Steve, I'll ask you this question. So the way the MLB is set up, if the Phillies are one of the last wild cards, is it an elimination game?
No, they'll go three games.
They did away with that, yeah.
Okay, they'll go three. That's awesome. Good.
I didn't like that.
Back to the Didi thing.
Well, you go Wheeler Nola then.
Didi is a veteran right now. Stott, of course, is the rookie. So I expect Didi to get a bulk of the playing time, but they're going to mix Stott in to play second, short, third. There's good options right here. Same thing with Derek Hall. Derek Hall will mix in. You may even see Bryce Harper in center field for a couple games
that'd be interesting.
They're going to mix it. The Phillies have a lot of good options. They are better off today as they were. And I give Dave Dombrowski really an A. I'm not giving him an A+, but a solid A. You know, you hate losing Logan O'Hop, who was their fifth best prospect in the organization. But I don't know what prospects mean. Prospects, schmospects. It's like assets. It's like Sam Hinkie with his assets. But when you look at the other starting pitchers that were available, Nathan Eovaldi, he's an older guy, 32 years old. It was a lot of talk. Dombrowski worked with him with the Red Sox. I think that was the betting favorite. That's who he would be getting. And I think Syndergaard, the talk of Syndergaard died down today. They said the Phillies were off the table. I mean, this Syndergaard was a better option than Eovaldi's, Josh.
I agree with you, Doc, absolutely. And again, I think sometimes change of location has something to do with it. You know, one thing, Doc, that I'm looking at and saying is hopefully we're not going to do the bullpen game, which means let's not forget that Syndergaard's in a contract year as well. So they've been going an extra game without him, giving him an extra rest. We don't have to. We can ride this puppy, okay? Like, let's go. I mean, Doc,
if he plays, in other words, If you get Eflin at all, it's a bonus. So they're not figuring on him.
No,
but
he's out.
Is he pretty much into
the 60-day?
So he's out, and God knows if he's ever going to come back. So, but I just remember it's hard when you hear that name and you think of him in the Mets. You just think they're going on a run. And
they had the aces.
This guy Syndergaard is played in a World Series, and his leadership, like, he's a real personality. Like, he's going to be just a ton of fun, like, in the city. He's exactly what Philly needs. He has a huge edge to him. Well, he has a ton of edge. He really plays with emotion. And that's why I'm so excited to see Syndergaard. I mean, he was on a Hall of Fame trajectory. Like, I love this guy. And this guy's even gone seven innings. So it's theoretical Syndergaard can be your it's theoretical that he can actually be like a third or fourth guy in the playoffs. I have that much confidence in him. I really do. He can battle Kyle Gibson for that spot.
Well, they'll go three, let's be honest. I mean, and the other guys will be in the bullpen.
So Rangers, you're clear third right now?
You know, I mean, it all depends. I think it's going to be, you got 2.5 months to pan it out. Doc.
Yeah, you never know.
Kyle's been good. And Kyle at home in the playoffs,
Rangers have been really good. So I just like the trajectory of this team. And the fact that Dombrowski did exactly what you wanted him to do, and he's predictable. From a general manager standpoint, I think you'd be loath to find a better GM in the city. I mean, obviously. Roseman, had a great, he had a really good 2 years of drafting so far. But the thing about Dombrowski is he's such a straightforward guy. When you listen to his press conference, he's not a snarky guy, very likable person. I just enjoyed listening to his press conference today driving in. I mean, that was a good news about being stuck in the office.
Well, Bruce, you look at this lineup now, this Phillies team. You have Alec Bohm, who's hitting out of his mind, who just had one of the best Julys that we've ever seen, like hitting like maybe 380 or 385. JT's waking up. Reese
434, Spencer. Yeah.
434
for the entire July. One of the best ever. So now that Bohm is coming around, you have JT, Reese Hoskins, Gene Segura.
Sure.
And then you're going to have either Stott or Didi. That's a championship level infield. It's a championship level infield with Castellanos, Bryce Harper, Schwarber. This team is absolutely a loaded lineup. And if they get hot, this team can beat absolutely anybody. This team can really compete in the playoffs. And like Steve said, I talked to Steve and I was debating with Steve, could this Phillies team without Harper, could they right the ship or tread water? And after the Cubs series, it was looking bleak, but they went to Pittsburgh and they had some games in extra innings, Josh. And you know what? They came out on top in extra innings. It was gut check. well, in Pittsburgh.
That's true, Josh. You have to say, looking at the Phillies over the last few years, it would seem they would always split with teams like the Cubs, the Marlins, the Pirates.
Diamondbacks.
It was maddening how they didn't take care of business with the bad teams. This team, and I also think you can't overstate the point of Topper Thompson. This manager
31-18
is just, he's my favorite manager since Charlie Manuel. He's very honest. He's a funny guy. Everybody loves this guy. Judd Kruk, everybody you listen to.
He's a baseball
And when
guy.
You have a baseball guy like that who's finally getting his chance, it just seems like things are moving in the right direction. I believe that we're not the only people in town who are taking note of the Phillies. I think they're going to get – they're an exciting team. They're going to a stretch run. I think that Dombrowski is going to be rewarded because there are going to be they're going to be selling out a lot of games.
And Derek Hall.
And as we head through August, through August – into September and October, I think you're going to see the attendance really improve because this team is going to, this city is looking for a winner.
Well, Doc, you know what's exciting about this weekend is they're bringing back Pete Rose and the 1980 Phillies team. So alumni weekend, which is always a blast down in Citizens Bank Park. They're going to be down there. They're going to be honoring, obviously, I forget, who are they honoring?
Bake McBride.
And Ron Reed.
Big Ron Reed.
I love Bake McBride. Do you remember that guy?
Love him. Yeah.
You know, this guy, Bake McBride, was shaking that bat. I remember the 80 Phillies.
Fancy, you know, these people are too young.
I know them I remember like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Well, 1980, I guess.
No, I know.
You can't remember if you were.
No, not at all. 14. I was being facetious. Yeah,
he wasn't
was
born.
They
were trying. If you weren't born, you don't expect.
I don't
anymore
remember
anything.
Remember
Bill Russell going against Chamberlain. So we also have to just make an insertion about Bill Russell certainly grew up, as a very small kid watching the Celtics. And Bill Russell, I remember a commercial. It was a phone commercial. He goes, "If you got the shot, don't pass off." So Russell passed this week, and he was a tremendous player. He's a guy who was obviously a Celtic. We love to hate, but when you think about Chamberlain and Russell, that was one of the best rivalries ever in the NBA, and. And again, this guy ran into a lot of adversity. He ran into
racism,
serious racial discrimination. Mm-hmm. And at times, especially after retirement, he was a surly guy. He didn't like signing autographs. He didn't like being interviewed. But you know what? He had to say he was scarred with a lot of what he went through. And you got to give the guy credit for 11 rings. Tell us your thoughts of Bill Russell. Let's go around and take a moment to talk about that.
I know I'm going to get heat for this, but arguably one of the – in my opinion, top five greatest players. I put him ahead of LeBron James just for what he's done. I mean, I know he wasn't the most offensive gifted, but I mean, defensively, unbelievable presence. This is a guy that won 11 championships, won a championship as a player coach, and the things he did off the court. I mean, he was tremendous as far as you said, that battling the racism and just was an advocate. We didn't like him because we're Philadelphia fans, but like any great sports person that we can respect when their playing days are over, like Larry Bird or any of the
John Havlicek. You can think about those great Celtics. Yep. You got to give him props for being so consistent, so great.
Yeah.
He wasn't a 7-footer, but he played it, and it was interesting. I've read a lot about him, in the last couple of days. Back when he was starting, it was frowned upon to block shots. They said that if you jump, that you're a bad defense player. He wasn't that tall. So he was able to jump and block shots, and his battles with Chamberlain were epic, and certainly that goes down as one of the best rivalries
ever. Where do you
ever.
Rank him all time, Bruce? I mean, this is a guy that all he did was win rings.
I would put him in top 10. We could certainly talk about it. But when you think of the Celtics dynasty, because 11 rings, there are so many bit players on that team. I remember Sam Jones and obviously Larry Bird. Another guy we didn't really like, but Bird, of the Celtics, I'd say Bird and Russell and maybe Havlicek. I saw a lot of Havlicek, tremendous player, very consistent. So who's to say? I would say those three Celtics are top 12.
How could a guy, though, with 11 championships not be in top five? I mean,
because there was less teams. There's also back a lot of,
there are also some great players.
How many teams are
on
there?
On this team, Sam Jones.
They play with plumbers
Casey
and
Jones.
And firemen.
There are a lot of great Celtics on
but
that
But how
team.
Many teams? How many teams were there back in the back in the 60s?
When, that's a good when, question. When, how many teams
Bill
were there?
Russell was there.
I don't know.
But you look at, like, even Kareem Abdul-Jabbar won four college championships. John Wooden won 11 championships. But Bill Russell, one of the most consistent players, one of the best defensive players, battled through all the adversity and just it just was an incredible, you know, pioneer for what the league is today. And every year, the finals, the best player in the NBA championship gets the Bill Russell trophy, and he's just been always so gracious and just a winner and really historic, you know, for bringing the NBA where it is today with, you know, like racial equality, like you guys have talked about. And so Bill Russell's been really special. But talking about the Celtics, I think McHale is also up there. I think Kevin McHale is probably my third Celtic. I think Danny Ainge is just a guy that everybody hated too. And but that was the 80s. And the 60s, I guess, maybe you played with Bob Cousy on that team.
Bob Cousy is a tremendous player. Again, I have to say I don't remember him because I'm not that old. I'm old, but not that old that I remember Bob Cousy.
World War II.
Don't remember him at all. But I do remember Bill Russell.
James
and
Naismith.
And I remember Will Chamberlain. You know what my remembrance was? This is interesting. I was 8 years old when they played the All-Star game at the Spectrum. And Will Chamberlain he went to the L.A. Lakers, and he came in that velvet purple uniform. And I was there with my dad, and I didn't know my dad was going to pass within 2 years. But just to go with my dad in 1967 and see Will Chamberlain, and albeit in a Lakers uniform, they're the kind of memories you never forget.
No. Doc, you know one of the things about Bill Russell that people always talk about, that he's one of the legends, but he was very old school, and he taught it the right way to some of the younger guys. And if he felt that you were stepping out of line or you didn't respect it, the game the right way, he would say something. And that's what's almost lost with this generation.
You know, really respect that toughness.
Yeah, he taught it, and he was considered one of the greatest team players of all time. I mean, he could have scored 50 points a game as well. But, you know, he got other guys involved, and he made the right plays, but he was also he did it the right way in a tough city that's known for racism. Let's not forget this. He could have probably forced his way out because I'm sure he heard the cat calls.
But it must have been 10 times worse.
Yeah, but he didn't because he was with a dynasty and Red Auerbach and the team within itself. So he did it the right way. He really did. And I know people oftentimes say, like, well, he didn't take the autographs and everything else. Guys are like that. Some of them are just like...
It's really hard, though. You know, it's really tough. And we were out watching some golf. And
live style.
We were watching some golf live style. And we realize the one thing great about that, and again, we'll talk about that, not to completely diverge from Bill Russell, but these guys were really in the zone. And if they were to... Like Patrick Reed was there, and everyone would say, Patty, Patty, Patty. And Phil, the thing that Phil has is... He perfected the thumb movement, so they can say how you doing, and he was almost, you know, like a trade seal as far as everybody. People say, "Give us a thumbs up, Phil." And it's easy to say that, but when you say Patty, like, what do you think? If those guys were going to engage every fan, and for instance, Michael Jordan, if Michael Jordan was to sign every autograph, and or Tiger Woods was to do the same thing, so for Bill Russell, if you're that famous. You just kind of almost have to have a little bit of a wall, or you could spend your whole life just posing for pictures and signing autographs. So I don't know where the line is, really.
Well, it's a give and take.
But I think it's different. I mean, back then, Bill Russell endured. I mean, he has some scarring and reasons to not. But when you look at the modern day athletes, some of them are just arrogant and don't want to give any type of autographs. I was at a Chipotle once where Charles Barkley, and it's a long story, but the bottom line is, this guy had his meal, and he must have spent 45 minutes signing and taking pictures with every single person that came up to him without question, you know. So,
well, there's a story about Barkley, and he talks about when he was on the first year, he's out to dinner. They lose to Atlanta he's with Dr. J and Moses Malone, and they're trying to eat. And Barkley's like, I've had enough of these people. We're on a 4-game losing streak. And Moses Malone looks at him and says, you know what? Stop right now. these people have one invested all their money to watch you play, and this is how you're going to make your living once the basketball's over. So you sign every autograph, smile. You don't have to do everything all the time, but be gracious, you know. And you know what? Look at Barkley now. I mean, he makes $20 million off TV and endorsements. He hasn't played in the last, 15, 20 years, Doc? He's made more money on TV every year than that. But, I mean, I was with a player, Sim Bular, who was 7'5", at New Mexico State. He was very shy. It's hard to believe someone 7'5", that commands that type of presence. But people would stop us in the airport left and right, and it got to a point, like, after about 20 or 30 people, it was like, guys, like, he wants to eat dinner. Maybe he'll come back or come by later. But he was very shy. His brother was like Turtle from Entourage, like loved everything the entire time, ate it up, could take advantage of whatever he wanted. But like Sim, all he wanted to do was hang out with his teammates and go. And it was like some of the coaches had to begin to shelter him. Like, okay, you know, we get it. But
yeah, and I guess it all depends on the circumstance. If you're out in public, you know, like if Embiid is out at an Eagles game, I understand that, you know, he'll walk around and he'll have a hoodie and he'll have his head down. If he's at his steakhouse, which he's at a lot. Especially when somebody's eating, you just have to have respect for people and not approach them. Occasionally, when they do, you know, peek their head out, if they're heading for the door, that's when you approach them. And
Yeah, the timing's right. But you have to be respectful.
But you know what it is? We always, sometimes, if you have a bad experience with a star, you will never forget that.
Yeah.
But if somebody's really nice to you, you also never forget that, especially with your kids, Steve.
But you've
said saw the way Matt Rhule treated us, treated your sons, and treated my son right here. I mean, right, he's in a huge stadium.
Fan for life, yep.
You know what? So there are guys like that. Barkley is known for being the most accessible guy. Just right here at Bala Cynwyd, you know. He has a house around here. And if you catch him anywhere, you know, he'll always say hi to you.
And also LeBron James, like we saw him somewhere.
You had a great experience with LeBron.
It was 2011, so I was, you know, 16, and he was so, you know, he took a picture after, and people were waiting for him after, but you didn't interrupt him, you know, when he's in the restaurant eating in New York.
Said to him, I think I've told you this story many times.
Oh, did I have like a shirt?
This is what you did. You saw LeBron James. And we were in the Ritz-Carlton, we're in the lobby, and we're staying in the same hotel, and you said, Mr. James, I want to get your T-shirt. He literally did. He goes, I want to go to the Nike store and get your T-shirt, and I want to bring it back, and will you sign it? And what did he do? He waited for you and signed
so.
It.
I think so.
As much as...
But that was all LeBron. Would he do it today? I don't think so.
Oh, no. But I mean, stays with me. I mean...
It was great.
My view of LeBron, it's going to be better just because I was influenced by that experience.
Bruce, you're
he really treated Spencer really well.
Bruce, you're my
it's
best
hard
friend.
For me. You're my best friend.
You've often said to me why you like certain athletes. It's because they're good to your kid. And that, and
that
no
is
matter
definitely
what,
true.
As much as he might be our opponent, we might hate him on the court when they're playing, but you've always respected anybody that's, so you appreciate that.
And you feel the same with your boys.
Way. Absolutely.
Well,
you know
just like Jalen Brunson is great to your kids.
And well, that's
you know
the
what Charles Barkley said? They asked him recently, like, why? How have you kept, like, how are you now the same guy, like, at 19 as you are now, and you're so successful, and you're an NBA Hall of Famer, you've been on TV 20 years, you're one of the biggest personalities in American sports. How are you still the same humble guy? And he's like, we dribble a silly ball for a living. Yeah. That's what we do. We play a kid's game.
Yeah.
This is a kid's game, and everything that comes with it is crazy.
But
so
he's a guy that
he's
loves
the
life.
Same
That's
guy.
Exactly right.
He's the same guy.
He's happy.
And right during the Dream Team, he was always out, and he was a man of the people. But yeah, some of these athletes take themselves so serious. If I was ever a coach like Josh, if you were ever the coach of the Eagles or Sixers, you would be having all these fan engagement activities, right? When you were at Memphis, Josh, how great was it to see like young kids that are a fan of Memphis, and then those kids can grow up dreaming to be like Memphis Tigers.
We did a lot of good things in the community. It was one thing that I really took a lot of pride in. We were with St. Jude's Hospital twice a month during the off season, once a month during the regular season, because, you know, humility needs to be taught. Like, these guys will sit there and complain, oh, well, I got to go to class and everything else. And you're like, you have kids at St. Jude Hospital that are fighting for their lives. Like, they have no idea. They'll never
be able to get it.
And that's when all of a sudden it hits hard. So,
I want to take an opportunity. We have a special guest in our studio tonight, a longtime fan of Rover Sports and his entire family. We have Andrew Batt here, who I coached when you were little. I coached your brother, Justin. I know your dad, Rich, and mom, Heather. And they're big-time, long-time Rover Sports fans. Always, never miss an episode. Always tuning in on social media and everything. Andrew, welcome to the studio.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So Andrew's a big sports fan, big Rover sports fan. So just wanted to welcome you in tonight. And it's an aspiring play-by-play kind of guy. And that's what...
So Andrew, who are you? So would you say you're Eagles and Phillies? I mean...
I'm a very big Eagles fan, Phillies fan as well.
So have you seen today, like, the reports out of training camp about, like, Jalen, you know, hitting some passes today? And what do you think about how this offseason and training camp is going so far?
I did. And I heard Brandon Graham in an interview speak about the defense and all the great things that they're looking at on the defensive end. He also made a small comment about the secondary and with the additions of James Bradbury and Tart. It should be a fun season.
It's pretty amazing that no other team was thinking about signing James Bradbury, but it just seems like Howie Roseman, I mean, is taking advantage in spots where other teams are being negligent. Like, you look at N'Kobe Dean, that's on this team, Hassan Reddick, and if Brandon Graham is healthy, this is going to, I bet that this defense is going to be fun to watch. And you look at this division, Andrew, and I mean, the Cowboys, Dak Prescott said it could be the golden year. You probably heard him say that. How do you think, like, this team could stack up defensively, really, in this division?
Well, out of all the off seasons I've seen as the Eagles fans, this is the best we've ever done. N'Kobe Dean going into the draft was my highest-rated Georgia player. And, I mean, for sure, the injuries that they had for him going into the draft that were released right after definitely brought down his stock. But regardless, getting him in the third round was a steal. With the injuries that we usually get at the O-line, Juergens should play a role as well. And I think we killed the draft.
Amazing. Amazing. And Steve, you look at Hunter, what is it, Dickinson? The guy from Landon. That's actually Landon. The Michigan guy I'm getting him confused with. Steve, you look at this offensive line now that the Eagles have with Juergens. I mean, I watched Juergens at Nebraska. He couldn't snap the ball as a freshman. He would snap it over Adrian's head every play. He was as raw of a center as you're going to find. But Scott Frost kept playing this guy, even though the fans wanted Juergens bench because he literally could not complete a snap. And Frost is like, you should see the intangibles. You should see the tangibles. This kid, Juergens, is going to be a special player, Bruce. And that's what the coolest part about what Scott Frost did at Nebraska is he let Juergens grow. This kid is an athletic freak as a center. His upside, his intangibles, the way he works against Oklahoma, he would sometimes the worst thing you could say about Juergens is he'd get a penalty because he's 20 yards downfield, like, shoving guys. So he just brings edge, like, intangibles. And even if you're not an Eagles fan, this crew is a likable crew. Jordan's a likable kid. Cam Juergens, Dickinson. It's like, it's awesome, isn't it? Like, to see this young core. And in 2017, it was great with the older guys. But this is like a young core that can grow.
Yeah, I think that when you get Jordan, you get N'Kobe. The two of these guys play so well together. They might be playing as a unit. Obviously, you're going to have Fletcher. I heard TJ Edwards interviewed today. And a real nice interview with John Rich, one of my favorite people. And he really believes, and it was very detailed, he got into it, that his knowledge of the defense, that the defense is really moving a lot quicker. And if you have him and N'Kobe shifting in and out there, and if you have N'Kobe and Georgia, just the way they worked together at Georgia, the way they communicated, the way they did stunts, having both of those guys, it's so exciting. And having Hassan Reddick, I watched some of his highlights over the last few years, and just so fast. Like, he's not that big of a guy, but he's really fast. And I remember last year I just didn't know what to expect. I was a little apathetic with Nick Sirianni and all these guys. But I think that, and as far, I guess one thing I want to bring up is, Andrew, I got a question. Back in the old days, they did 3-a-days. The guys, there was a lot of tackling, a lot of hitting. It seems like they're practicing less. They're doing these walkthroughs. You're watching that. What are your thoughts about that?
To an extent, I agree. And I think player protection is very important, especially as they continue to have more concussion studies done. Player protection in the offseason is definitely important. However, it is important for teams to get reps, but I hope that going to the preseason games, that's where they'll get the good reps for the regular season.
Well, Andrew, I guess Josh has been summoned here.
I got to jump in here. I'm sorry. Yeah. Andrew, if they're not getting they're not going to get reps in preseason because they're not playing anybody. As Spencer pointed out today in the Hall of Fame game, Travis Etienne, who didn't even play at all last year for the Jacksonville Jaguars, is not going to play. Trevor Lawrence, who was terrible last year, isn't going to play. We have powder puff football going on down in South Philly right now, Doc. And
they're not even running. They don't even call jog throughs or even run throughs. They're calling them walk throughs, which really that bothers me.
And do you see what they're wearing on their heads? They're wearing shower caps on their heads.
I have a question for our neurologist. So Bruce, you have two hats here. You're a big time fan, sports fan, and you're also obviously. Sorry, board-certified neurologist, tops in your field. So Andrew brings up a good point about concussions and hitting and long-term ramifications. What are your thoughts as to protecting these players from concussions and eventual CTE and lessening the load versus knowing that they have to keep up with stamina late in the season and when Dick Vermeil had 2 3-a-days, what are your thoughts?
I think that I agree with Josh. They've swung way past, there's a moderation period. So number one, I don't mind them wearing those silly, those foam hats, really. They're really funny looking, and the fact that they're black, it just makes them look funny. And it is funny, Kelsey wore bubble wrap. Like, he's such a smart guy. They literally put him in bubble wrap, which of course was an irony. So I don't mind those big guys wearing that. Who cares? But what I really want to see is, I want to see these. So they're talking about soft tissue injuries. They're talking about little calf strains and hamstring strains and little shoulder strains. And in my opinion, they should be running. In other words, look at the Sixers. These are basketball players. What are they doing all summer? Okay, they are playing basketball. Look at Maxey. What is he doing? He's playing 3 hard training sessions, lifting weights, where the Eagles are standing around. I was watching around, just standing around. At minimum, these guys should be running. They don't, even if they're not hitting one another, there should be so many reps. They should be out there. Jalen Hurts should be out there for 8 hours, just throwing the ball and developing and also going against the, I don't care if they don't hit, but these people should be running, and they should be 2 3-hour practices. There's a difference between hitting. But the fact that they're just standing around, and this is the optimum time, and when you know the preseason, like you say, Josh, they're not going to play Jalen Hurts. Now, for me, my favorite player is Carson Strong. That's all I care about is him. And again, why? Because we're friendly with him. And right now, he gets like 6 reps a day. Sure. And that's, here he had a great day. He had 3 completions out of 6. And I think the good news is, because Hurts is going to be a bubble wrap, you're going to see Carson Strong, particularly against the Browns and particularly against the Dolphins. So Strong is going to get his reps. Mitchell is going to get his reps. But I just think the idea of not doing run-throughs and not doing reps. These are like guys like N'Kobe Dean and Jordan. Those guys should be playing in a... They don't have to be hitting, but they should be rehearsing their moves over and over. They should be doing it for hours and hours and hours. Then they should break for lunch and come back and do it for hours and hours. Because you're afraid. I'm a sports doctor, okay? And Nick Sirianni, he's a good coach, but he's certainly not a genius. He's basically saying, I'm going to rely on what the doctors say. Now, look, I don't know the doctors personally who run this team. And I do know one of the sports guys who's a tremendous guy, physical therapist. But the fact is, if you look at the Eagles, they went for years, and every year what happened? They got hurt. They couldn't rehab guys. They didn't know what they were doing. And so, I'm sorry. I don't know. Just there was a fly in the room, I guess. But in any event, that wasn't good news. That was not distracting at all. That's the best news. That wasn't distracting at all.
So, okay. So Bruce, it's not like they really hit in practice anyway when they had 2 a-days and 3. So you're 100% right.
They were doing thuds. Why can't they practice for hours?
They should be.
The point is, here's the point I was making. Reason? We probably got distracted. This medical staff, every year they got fired. And now they're telling Nick Sirianni, just practice less, don't run. Well, you know what? The logical thing, if you keep going it, maybe they shouldn't practice at all. Maybe they shouldn't run at all. They shouldn't lift weights at all. That way they'll have no injuries. They'll be the healthiest team again. But that's it. But so the people that are giving them advice are those whose incomes are tied into retaining their position, six-figure salary. So, but you got to take that with a grain of salt. And the coach has got to balance that. Of course the doctors are going to say, just don't do anything.
I got a great idea.
That's silly, isn't it?
I got a great idea. We'll eliminate all injuries. Let's just have Nick Sirianni play Ron Rivera in Madden football. It's just video games.
Nobody will get hurt.
You don't need the players anymore to get hurt.
Is that what Ron Rivera said?
So, Doc, let me ask you this question, because it's so ironic that we're sitting here, and you know what's funny? Everyone's like, oh, the players absolutely love Nick Sirianni. Well, if I was a player and got paid $12 to $15 million a year and practiced for an hour every day, I would love him too. He'd be my favorite coach of all time. I mean, I have practices of basketball and baseball. We do 2 and 3 hour drill sessions. You go from one station to the next to the next.
Can you imagine a 58? Can you imagine showing up and you're coaching professional athletes and it's a 58-minute practice? What a waste of time that is.
We sit there as a basketball staff. We'll sit there the morning of and go, okay, we're going for 90 minutes. What are we doing? And we'll break down every section. And there is, guess what? There are 2 or 3 mandatory water breaks in between. But these guys are going hard. The Eagles probably couldn't cut our and basketball. Our football players that play on the basketball team, they're normally back in basketball shape in January. Football is normally done in November. So we have guys that just they're gassed because of all the standing around.
How about Mike Patton and the way that you grew up playing high school football? But you built camaraderie through adversity. But the problem is it's the amount of games. So it's 7. If there were 15 games, it would be better, because the 15 games you'd see more physicality, more urgency. The fact there's 17 games, you can't peak too early in a season. You look at the Patriots peaked in October, and now that there used to be 14 games when you were growing up, and that was absolutely perfect. College football every Saturday matters, but now it's 17 games. But you look at roughing the passer. That's the problem, is you have to put some blame on the commissioner, because as a defensive player, you can't drive a quarterback into the ground or you get penalized. So you're instructed not to hit. And that's the problem. There's no hitting in this professional league.
Well, Spencer, I'm going to stop you there right there, because here's the deal. I have no problem hitting, okay? But if you're going to drive someone into the ground, the play's already where the play's already over. Now we're paying these guys, these prima donnas, $40 million a year to play quarterback. All right, that's a major hit on your financial cap.
No, but Josh, sometimes it's right after. Sometimes if it's a shove, right as the guy's going, you've seen some of these calls. They're ridiculous. But the fact is, the NFL, they're preaching all about safety, but yet we're playing games on Thursday. How does that make sense? The NFL's all about safety, but you're playing games 2 days later on a Thursday.
Jeffrey Bezos has something to say. That's why.
Well, one thing that's interesting is there are some teams that are still doing it the old-fashioned way. They're still having hard practices, and they're still hitting. And other teams like ours, like all we're saying is how great it was we had so few injuries. But look how we finished up. When we played, if you looked at last year, really, we beat up against really, really bad teams, okay? And the Giants were terrible, and I don't see them being much better. The Redskins, I'll always call them the Redskins, are a bad team. But look what happened when Tom Brady came in. It was like, it reminded me of a walkthrough. Yep. Brady, nobody even laid a hand on him. And so you looked at the record last year, which I think was inflated by the teams they played against.
Yeah.
So I don't think they need to do any victory laps. I think these guys, especially with the new players, they need to practice. They need to just, in neurology, in medicine, the way you learn motor skills is by repetition. And for a guy like Hurts, who's inaccurate, who has trouble getting his feet set, and again, and I listened to his interview, and it seems like, you know, I like the guy, but it's a lot of fluff. You know, like, I can listen to certain people, but it just seems like the same thing over and over with Hurts. And I hope it's going to be different. But it reminds me of that song by The Who, "We Won't Get Fooled Again." He just said, I'm just going to work hard, and we're going to work hard, and work hard, work hard. But the fact is he going to be better? And in the fact that they're limiting him, they're not going to play with the preseason, they're really tying one of his hands behind his back. And of all people, This is a guy who needs to be out there all day long throwing passes. He needs to work on his repetition, his timing. He needs to get to know these receivers, and especially A.J. Brown, and to do a practice for 58 minutes.
And Bruce, you
and I saw the practice. It's just a joke.
Bruce, you know what? I'm going to go back and look at last year's schedule. You know what happened during the first four games of last year? To your point, I'm illuminating your point. They were 1-3. You paid your hard-earned money to go down to the state of Texas. That isn't an easy plane flight. It's a 2-hour, 3-hour flight. You and Steve were there on Monday night. That was a thrashing. That was embarrassing. You played the Dallas Cowboys. They gave up 41 points to Dak Prescott in that team. Jalen Hurts was throwing interceptions.
He was.
Hurts, the offense was horrible at the beginning of last year. If you remember that 49ers game, you played against an injured Jimmy Garoppolo, a team who barely made the playoffs. Now, they did do well when they made it. It was a 17-11 game. The Eagles couldn't score in week two last year. And then Kansas City. The defense, again, gave up 40 points. So the defense during the month of September, they're really going to take a hit. Even though they played well against the Falcons with a first-year coach, brand new staff, they were awful in the month of September. The entire football team was 1-3. It might be the same thing again, even against easy opponents.
Well, I'm going to make a point. I want Steve to react to this. Looking at last year, that Eagles team was characterized by no scoring in the first half. All those games, they just didn't have any timing. It took them literally two quarters to get in sync. And the teams they won, the games they won, they came back and they played well. And I believe that has a lot to do with repetition, muscle memory. And if you're practicing hard and you're practicing and your guys would see in sequence, and you have 11 guys, they have to be in sequence there, especially the offensive linemen have to be in the right position. They've got to deal with stunts. Even if it's a jog through, maybe not a run through, but a jog through. So I think you could link that to the lack of practice last year, the soft practice, the lack of hitting, and the lack of muscle memory. And it's the same thing. It's going to be Groundhog Day. We might see the same thing where they start off, they can't score any points in the first half. Then they're down 10, 14 points. That's no way to win. That's not a championship way of playing. What do you think?
Bruce, you're so on point. It's ridiculous. And I don't know why they're not getting more heat than they are. But the reality is the Eagles have a very strong offensive line. Let's just look at what they need to do to win this season. Jalen Hurts needs to be a quarterback, okay? He has Shane Steichen. I give him a lot of credit last year and Nick Sirianni for doing an about-face on the Eagles' offense. It wasn't a passing game, so they changed it into a run-first type of situation. But, you know, obviously Tampa Bay was onto them, the defense was onto them, and they had that walkthrough. Todd Bowles, who is not the best defensive coordinator in football, I mean, he's average at best, figured it out and set the primer for the rest of the league on how to defend the Eagles. But when you look at what's important, if the Eagles are going to be a passing offense, it's predicated upon what? Timing patterns. So it goes back to your point about muscle memory. It's about timing. It's about knowing where your receivers are. For Jalen Hurts to be successful, he needs to be on the field and go through reps over and over. He's got to trust his offensive line. Number one, they're going to protect him. Number two, he's got to trust his receivers to run the pattern. He can't throw it too early, and he can't wait until they get to where they have to get to on the field. He has got to.
It's not college. It's not Oklahoma.
It's not college.
It's not Alabama. It's totally different. You've got to throw and anticipate when they're coming loose. Whereas in college, you can see the guy open and just throw it to him.
He's got
to
anticipate.
It's so different.
He's got to wait for them to anticipate the route and get there.
It's going
to
be a fascinating, Steve. It's going to be a fascinating.
You know what's really fascinating? The fact we have to take a break, and we'll be back. For the top
Joe
of the
Buck
hour.
And John Smoltz welcoming you back to the City Center Convenience Mart. Well, John, the stage is set for the final transaction.
That's right, Joe. Heather's moment has arrived, and you just hope all that training pays off.
Heather lays down her purchase, but Randy rings it up as slowly as he can.
He is a wily veteran.
It gives Heather's eyes the chance to wander.
Uh-oh.
Yep, she's looking at the cigarettes.
There's nothing good back there. Quit now, and in 5 years, your odds of getting certain cancers drop 50%.
Meanwhile, Randy's stone-faced. He's giving nothing away. He just stands there, wetting his cashier's finger on that sponge.
Heather toes the rubber.
Here we go. Heather's arm is in motion. But instead of pointing at the back wall, she just grabs the gum off the counter.
That's a slick move.
Heather, back, back, back. She is out of there. Even Randy tips his cap to Heather. Stand Up to Cancer and Rally wants you to reduce your risk for cancer. Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Pinnacle Medical Plus is a full-service urine toxicology and durable medical equipment company serving patients throughout the continental United States. With over 25 years of industry experience, the professionals at Pinnacle Medical Plus provide high-quality services and products combined with excellent service at a reasonable price. On the urine toxicology side, Pinnacle is a trusted partner that provides the most up-to-date therapeutic drug monitoring technology. On the DME side, Pinnacle offers an extensive list of premium products along with priority delivery services. At Pinnacle Medical Plus, their number one goal is making sure their customers and patients receive the quality care and services they deserve. Contact Pinnacle Medical Plus for all of your urine toxicology and durable medical equipment needs at 888-396-8644 or online at www.pinnaclemedicalplus.com.
Welcome back in to Rover Sports. We are here, WWDB, 860 AM, 97.5 HD2, in the same building as the Fanatic. And we have Colin Newby, who's a tremendous producer, doing a great job. We have Andrew Batt here sitting in, an up-and-coming star in broadcasting. And, of course, Coach Josh Dacey, Dr. Lewis, and Spencer. We have a full group. I'd like to just touch upon one of the big news stories today that I found interesting. The Miami Dolphins were sanctioned today, and the owner specifically, Stephen Ross, uncharacteristically, you don't see owners basically being fined and basically banished for a series of games. But that happened to Stephen Ross today. Could you share the news with us?
Yeah, and of course it's a coincidence it's happening after the controversy of another Cleveland Browns football player. But basically, the Stephen Ross situation was, it was the off season, and he was hosting dinners with a football player on Tampa Bay, Tom Brady, who was on, was he on the Bucs or probably the Patriots? And then Sean Payton was meeting with him as well. Now, I don't know if there was any responsibility for Sean Payton or Tom Brady. They're not going to punish Tom Brady. You know why they're not going to punish Tom Brady? It's because the first game is Bucks Cowboys on Sunday night, and Tom Brady's the star. So all the money's going to be coming in.
I have a question. Was he retired at the time he was meeting with Stephen Ross?
Then they shouldn't have gotten punished, right?
I believe they said it was during the regular season.
Wow. Okay. That's some stones right there.
So you know Stephen what I think Ross, it is? I think
and
it's
Sean
clear.
Payton.
In other words, I think, and it reminds me also of the collusion, the same thing about basketball. There's no question the Sixers lined up that deal with the Rockets, with Harden, totally lined it up. There's no doubt the thing with Jalen Brunson and Rose, they lined that up. So just the same way they're investigating it, I don't think anybody disputes that this stuff happened. I think the league just wants to let people know that we know about it. The same thing with Stephen Ross. For $1.5 million for him is nothing.
10 cents.
That's like 10 cents. Andrew, you're going to make a comment. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the picks seemed a little harsh. So I believe they took away a first-round pick and a third. And the difference with the NBA is when they went for P.J. Tucker and the Knicks went for Jalen Brunson, they're aware that they'll be fined for that. But when you do tampering in the NBA, you lose maybe a second round pick a couple of years later. So it's like, I'm willing to get PJ Tucker a piece for a championship and lose a second round pick in the NBA. It's like, that's not very
valuable. Worth it. It's a good point. You're saying, Andrew, it's a calculated risk. Yes. That's a great point.
It's a great point. It shows the difference between Adam Silver and Roger Goodell. I mean, this is the point of fining somebody and sanctioning them is to deter future things from happening, and certainly an organization is going to think twice before they do something.
But the Dolphins and Stephen Ross, this team should be really good this year.
They are going to be really good, Spencer. I mean, they've got, look at Tyreek Hill, they got Waddle, you got Mike Gesicki, yeah, the All-American.
And Tua Tagovailoa, he's your favorite football player ever.
I don't think the Dolphins will survive the AFC.
So you're saying it's worth it, what they did?
The tampering? I think we're going to forget about it when the Dolphins are winning, because now Ross, and the NFL also said that Ross wasn't tanking, even though there were text messages, right, to Flores. What did they say, Josh? Well, that it was a joke?
You heard that, Josh. Go ahead.
That's the one thing that's been swept under the rug, okay? Yep. Brian Flores, who all his accusations, They basically said, they don't even acknowledge it. That would, it's falsified rumors, okay?
Yeah, yeah.
They just pushed Ryan Flores right away, okay? See you
well,
later.
That's the point where Roger Goodell, his interests and Stephen Ross's interests aligned. So when those interests aligned, they took the opportunity to give him a slap on the wrist for $1.5 million. But basically, Ross was able to come out today and say, look, this whole idea of us tanking and losing our purpose has been dispelled. I'm not going to challenge this fine about collusion or speaking to Tom Brady or Sean Payton. But the real news is, and it's really good because the Flores thing is really the elephant in the room. And the fact that Goodell and Stephen Ross could push, they could say, we're pushing it aside. We didn't tank on purpose. That takes some of the heat out of Flores. Is obviously, there's a lot of racial allegations. But one of the big things is that there are text messages, and you saw that basically Ross gave him direction. I'm going to pay you $100,000 if you lose the game. And apparently the league looked into that, and either they're looking the other way, which they might, or they're not going to take any action there. So it's really a mixed bag, but I thought that news was kind of interesting today, Spencer.
Yeah, because if the league's going to decide, and Stephen Ross has been there a while, if they're going to decide to, you know, you'd have to remove Stephen Ross in that instance. I'm not sure how many draft picks that would be if you're tanking the NFL. That's the Calvin Ridley, the suspension. It would just be just absolutely insane.
Well, Spencer, let's be honest. They don't put the same restrictions or penalties on players as they do owners. All right, they're going to fine him $1.5 million. Okay, Calvin Ridley was going to on pace to make close to $15 million this year. He's not going to make that. But because I will say this about Roger Goodell, unlike Adam Silver, who I think is the biggest pansy of a gentleman of a commissioner of all sports, I think he's the worst of the worst. He's going to come back. He's going to discipline him. Okay, we did it. We did it this way. We pushed it. One of the things that Spencer I thought was great was what you mentioned earlier. The Sean Watson ruling 2 days ago, this ruling today, we've already squashed that. Okay, that's already on the back burner. So 6 games, okay, we've got to focus on this. No one cares what Ross got fined. Okay, they're going to lose a first and a third round pick. No big deal, all right? I think the Miami Dolphins are in a good position.
Well, I think it's true also. Listening, driving around last night to Fitzsimmons, one of the things that's true is there is definitely a double standard in the NFL. Daniel Snyder, you know, there's a lot of allegations against him, and nothing really happened. He was supposed to not be to have his hands on the team, on the Commanders. It was the Commanders team, yeah. But if you watch him, he was right there in the press box. He, for all intents and purposes, was acting as an owner. They didn't really do anything, and the fact is that Calvin Ridley got a lot harder than Daniel Snyder, a lot harder than Stephen Ross. And these guys, you know, they're the owners, and that's probably the way it's going to be.
But the thing is,
that's not going to change.
But Roger Goodell works for the owners. I mean, so
Thing is, like with Calvin Ridley, like, and I don't mean to make light on this, but I mean, the guy, I don't even know if he was going to play this year anyway. Now, it doesn't, I mean, he has a lot of mental anxieties, and I pray for him to get better. You know, I really do. Betting on sports, you can't bet on your team because, right, that takes the integrity, like you said, Steve, of the game, right, away.
Because you can't bet on your sports, you can't bet at all.
You can't bet at all.
But I think the punishment is, personally, I if I were running the NFL, it'd be like 4 or 5, but that's not my decision, you know, so.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to talk a little bit about LIV Golf because there's a big controversy going on in the field of golf. We attended it. We were curious, and we went up to Bedminster.
Yeah,
and we saw what I thought was really a nice viewing experience. We saw some of the probably 15 best players in the world.
Yeah,
and I was looking for weirdness. I was looking for stuff that felt weird or was just different, and it really didn't. I think the fans who went up there were just regular people like us, but the ability to be able to stand inches away from Bryson DeChambeau, Phil Mickelson, Sergio Garcia, Brooks Koepka. It was really nice. The food I thought was good, very accessible. I was expecting to be really loud, blaring music like an AC/DC concert. It really was not. It was kind of mellow.
So it wasn't like the XFL of golf. It was
nothing at all. Not even
golf.
The arena. Not even
but
the arena
trying
football
to
of golf.
Make it. There but is it, music, you know,
but
like
the music, but it's soft music and it. But I just said, if they come back to the area and anybody has a chance to see him, for an experience. I saw a lot of fathers and sons. I saw a lot of families there, and
it's a real family affair.
It is a family affair.
It was good old clean fun, you know, at the LIV Golf Center, and it was. Just seeing these guys, and you know, next time I think the fans could even be, you know, more ferocious, and ferocious in terms of meaning there's more fans. But you look at Cam Smith; he could possibly join LIV Golf. I think they're looking for more. Celebrities and powers to join it. And Henrik Stenson made a statement W. And I'd say that in Portland, the numbers, I'm looking at YouTube all the time about the numbers, and the numbers are getting a little bit better each and every tournament. So, and also LIV Golf, they are responsible for the PGA Tour players getting a better lifestyle, because now the PGA Tour is competing, and that's what you call a monopoly. You learn that in seventh grade in social studies, that monopolies are bad, right? It's good to have competition. Look what's happening. Look what Phil Mickelson is doing for his fellow PGA Tour players that are bashing him. He's actually putting so much more money in their pockets.
They just infuse, as you probably heard, they just infuse millions and millions of dollars, the PGA Tour did, into the prize money to basically prop up their league. And competition is good. And Davis Love came out and he said something I think pretty stupid. He thinks that if any of the LIV players get to play in the majors, then all the regular PGA players should just boycott the majors.
Go ahead then. Please,
and if he does that, if he does that, basically the only people playing in the majors will be the LIV players, which will be just stupid. So sometimes you see the people with saber cage rattling and all that, but you know, I think I could just tell you it was a great experience. I was at Marion for 2013 U.S. Open. Many PGA tournaments. Here, the BMW is coming to Wilmington Country Club in August. So we're not going to be physically or
away. When is that tournament?
That's going to be at second or third week of August. Physically not here or very jet lagged. But in any event, but that's nice. So we're not saying that you shouldn't attend the PGA. But
that's exactly what we're saying. Boycott it. No,
I'm not saying boycott the PGA.
No, it just presents.
But I think it's great that. That people could come out and take their kids and watch professional golfers play. And the fact that golf's coming here to the Northeast, it was in New Jersey, it's coming to the BMW, it's coming to Aronimink next year. Is the PGA, there's a tournament coming, is that the PGA
Believe
next
it
year?
Or not.
I think it's Aronimink.
We will actually, we leave the 6th, and I believe we're home, what, the 15th of August? Is that correct?
Will you be able to attend that?
The BMW is actually the 18th to the 22nd.
It's in Wilmington.
And the 18th, we could go maybe.
So I have to speak
days.
To my dear friend, Dr. Matt McElrath. A big shout out to him, who's hosting a lot of people. And I didn't know my schedule, which is not unusual
for me.
We're
going to the VIP section with Matt.
So let's talk about that game one now.
Eagles-Lions.
Let's talk about Eagles-Lions. Andrew, you're an aficionado of the team. You remember last year where we played the Falcons and we really killed the Falcons and many of us were talking Super Bowl or bust. That could happen this year. Going away to the Lions. What do you see this as a win for the Eagles?
I do see it as a win, but more than that, last year I think Eagles fans, as we all are a little delusional, and when we went out there and we destroyed the Falcons last year, we all got a little overly excited. But I think this year's a little different. This offseason was big. And the Lions were expecting a win. I think this is a game where we go out and we kill them, and that's what we expect. And if we see otherwise, we'll be disappointed. But this shouldn't be anything other than a blowout win.
Dr. Lewis, what do you think about this Lions game? And I want to hear your analysis, Ed Spence. You're kind of a, I don't know if I could call you a Lions fan, but you do really like that franchise. You could probably go deeper into some of the personnel. A lot of people, they actually tuned in Rover Sports to hear you go deep into the personnel. Steve, what do you think about that Lions game overall?
It's so easy to just say the Eagles are going to win this game. And I think we all went around the horn and we had the Eagles pegged into this. But the more I focus in, and Spencer, you're going to comment on the really great moves, offseason moves, that the Detroit Lions made and the improvements that they made. I don't know that it's such a lock this game as everyone has thought. So, and especially you know, with the potential for upsets, Spencer. But why don't you tell us some of the
tell us about the Lions moves. And what do you see here? Give us some idea of the personnel,
unlike
please.
The Eagles, I mean, Dan Campbell is from the Parcells trees, from Sean Payton. They're all about physicality. You know, they play that nasty, gritty football. That's what they're all about in Detroit. And that's why their team is so much fun to watch, because Campbell is the common man. You know, he doesn't talk like a professional coach a lot. He doesn't give you coach speak. He's as real as it gets. He's as authentic as it gets. And Brad Holmes is one of the nicest guys in the business, and he's really improved their team. Sewell's going to be in year two. Their first round tackle is going to be in year two. Frank Ragnow, Taylor Decker, they have a really good offensive line. If DeAndre Swift, he's going to be healthy for week one. He's a St. Joe's prep kid. And Jared Goff's now going into year two there with Ben Johnson as the offensive coordinator. Remember this if you're Detroit. Everybody believes the Eagles, who made the playoffs, are going to stomp you. And last year, the Eagles played this Detroit team. You know what the score was? 44-0. You think the Lions are not going to remember the embarrassment of the Eagles going in and absolutely ripping their face off in embarrassing fashion? They're going to be up for this game. And the more you think about it, Steve, I'm kind of with you. I think Jared Goff is going to keep them in the game. I think the Lions could actually win this game. As crazy as it seems, the Eagles are going to be big favorites, but the Lions are going to have so much motivation in front of the home crowd.
Josh, what do you think about this?
Spencer's absolutely right. I think you can't lay down. The NFL is one of those years, one of those leagues that there is no dominant team every year. And the Eagles are going to have a ton of hype. I mean, we'll be talking about it as the games get closer, but Dan Campbell needs to make a statement. He's going into his second year. He's talked about chewing kneecaps and all this other stuff. I believe Jared Goff, there's a clause in his contract that they could opt out after this year. So he's got to
be. He's in a contract year.
He's in a contract year, too. It's very important. So he's someone that needs to prove that he can play in this league. Obviously, his previous team just won the Super Bowl in the LA Rams. So he's got to have a bit of a chip on his shoulder and be ready to go after it. So, I mean, this is a game that you can take lightly.
That's what I was saying. I mean, when we first looked at this game, and you know, I was like, Andrew, reflexively, they're going to beat them. But the more I thought about this, at home, the Lions, you can't lay down on any week. How devastating, Bruce, will this be for an Eagles offseason where they aren't playing hard, practicing hard, and they go into Detroit as a favorite, a heavy favorite, with so much promise, Dream Team 2.0 even. On paper, this Eagles team destined to win the division. And they lose the first game. How devastating would that be to the city?
I think it would, at least on the short term. I believe their schedule is very easy. As you went through, how you had them winning almost every game, and then at the back end, it gets so much harder. Yeah. You had them almost losing every game, if not every game. But so I don't really know. And at the beginning of a season, again, you know, I think that if the teams are both healthy, and I think the Eagles, the only silver lining about not practicing at all is the team should be healthy. But are they going to have, is Hurts going to have enough reps? Obviously, he's going to have reps when they play the Dolphins and the Browns. That's where he's going to have the most reps, just in practice, away in Cleveland and away in Miami. And hopefully that'll be enough reps for him. Because he's not going to play in that last game.
He's not going to play in Miami.
So I worry about rust. I do worry about rust. Wow. And I do worry about a lot of new players, you know. And like Whiteside, for instance, is playing a totally new position. Who knows what's happened with Rager? He caught one long bomb today, but I'm not ready to give him a gold watch yet.
Rager's not going to be on this team very long.
So you know who you got to watch out for? It's Hagotego Vaitai. He's going to have intel.
He's too far removed.
Hadatito Vaitai, but
he was on the Rover Sports. Didn't we have him on the show a couple years ago? Remember?
We had Alan Barbary.
Vaitai?
We might have had Vaitai on there.
On.
We did Vaitai Alan Barbary.
Hi,
you know what's really unusual?
Nicest guy.
I got to tell you this, Andrew. Whenever we have somebody on our show, it's the kiss of death. they usually get cut, they get injured, or they retire. So the fact that he's still playing in the league, I think, is really good.
Yeah.
Nick Stauskas.
Stauskas is still playing as a 12th man, so he's still hanging on.
He was on the show.
Is he a Bucks? Where is
Stauskas? Oh, Celtics.
Yeah, he's back in.
He was nailing threes in the NBA Finals.
So you mean with 30 seconds left?
Yeah, 30 seconds left.
He was a garbage time.
In a 24
Dick Stauskas,
your boy
he's
Andy.
One of the guys who is very interesting because Stauskas, he likes broadcasting. Stauskas actually took us into overtime. He kept on talking. We went past the time and nobody stopped him. So really a nice guy. But
well, Bruce,
but
if you're
Vitae,
if you're a neutral, v, if you're a neutral fan, you're rooting for Detroit because Detroit actually is working in the offseason, where the Eagles are just like walking through.
Yeah, this is you know what I if I'm betting on this game, Andrew, I would not bet on this game because I don't think it's an easy.
I'm sure the Lions are going to get plenty of points, and I wouldn't give them all those points. I think it will be a closer game than they think at minimum.
And go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I would agree. This is definitely not a game you would bet on. The Lions, as you stated earlier, have a chip on their shoulder. The Eagles are coming in here cocky as well. Miles Sanders has said multiple times how this is an all-star team, and the Eagles aren't going at it in the preseason.
It's shades of Vince Young.
Yeah, he said it. You know, it's funny. I remember seeing a report a couple weeks ago when he did say that, and then he was – I guess listening to other radio stations and claiming he didn't say it, and got annoyed with certain broadcasters that he claiming he said it, but he definitely said it. Miles Sanders needs to shut up and run the ball this year. That's what he needs to do.
And you're a Penn State guy, but that's coming from the biggest Penn State fan.
He just does.
So you're being the nice thing we like is that you call the balls and strikes. And AJ Brown came out, and I really like the leadership he's showing. And he basically said you can't say that, and the stuff that AJ is doing. For instance, he's going out of his way to meet the fans and sign autographs. They brought a lot of people in. They brought a Pee Wee football team in to practice. And A.J. Brown, and I believe it's not just show. I think that A.J. Brown is a Philadelphia
what
guy.
A personality.
And I love everything I see about him.
Well, the Pee Wee football team, what, are they running the football? And are they having hard three-a-days?
Much harder than the
Eagles.
Pee Wee team is playing harder than the Eagles.
It could really be a contest. I mean, the Pee Wee football versus the Eagles.
He walked into a sporting goods store the other day, and people didn't know who he was, and walked in and bought everybody A.J. Brown jerseys.
Yeah,
he's quickly
becoming one of our all-time favorite. We love him here at Rover Sports and in Philadelphia.
And he was
already.
Great. He was great, you know, with tempering expectations. Remember, he was asked about
he's
the question.
Leader.
But, Steve, you know what? I look at the schedule. This Lions game, I believe it in several ways, it's actually tougher than this Vikings team. Now, the Vikings probably are going to be a better team, but you're going to get up for a Monday night game at home, and you have the best receiver. I'd say Justin Jefferson is like 1A, maybe the best receiver that we've seen in this league in years. Kirk Cousins at home on Monday night. Kirk Cousins historically in prime time. That just seems like a game where the Eagles are going to be up for it. The defense will come alive. And
that's going to be a fun game.
I'm very confident in that game.
It's week two, our home opener.
The Lions game is a lot more mystery. Total mystery.
And I look at the Vikings historically are not a good away team, certainly, against the Eagles.
Remember
they don't
the
play
NFC
great at Lincoln Financial Field. And Kirk Cousins, again, I just think we're going to rattle them. It's going to be really loud. And I think these fans, you know, that's a really nice position. Whether or not we win or lose against the Lions, I think that's going to be a blitzkrieg game against the Vikings.
Yeah,
I feel much better about that game.
I agree.
What's game three? Why you're rolling through? What's game three, Spence?
We could talk about that.
Andrew wanted to say.
Andrew, go ahead.
I was going to say, with the Vikings seem like what the Chargers looked like last year. Not quite the complete defense. A couple superstars on offense and defense, and the Eagles are a more complete team. I think we roll right through them as well. And with the Lions, as you were speaking about A.J. Brown, that should be an interesting matchup with Amani Oruwariye, who was top three in interceptions last year, seeing if he could back that up next year. And Okuda, who was looking good at the very end of last year, who people were counting out early, who will be on Devontae Smith. So it'll be interesting how Hurts passes with those matchups.
And again, Devontae, you know, he ran out of gas last year, admittedly. It was a rookie year, and we expect Devontae to take a jump now in his sophomore year. Is that an away game or a home game, the game against Washington?
Washington is, where is that? I think it's in Washington, right?
So yeah. I'm expecting
Smith. We're going to that.
We are going to go to that game.
I'm expecting Smith to Washington.
That's an easy game. That's an Amtrak game. That's an hour
to FedEx,
right to FedEx Field.
To see the Hogs.
To just get sewage dumped on your head.
The Redskins.
But begin, the Redskins fans will also have that.
hopefully a wall doesn't give out like it did last year.
Yeah, that's one thing I thought Hurts was tremendous when he was there rescuing.
He's a great guy. We really love him.
You have to divorce the fact that we're not sure if he's going to take us to a championship from the fact that he is a great guy.
I think the Redskins, right, if they can go back to that logo, I would love it. Or if they could be the football team and just alternate every year. But I want them to stay at FedEx Field for the long haul. I don't want them to move from that stadium because it's a relic.
I haven't heard any rumors that they're building another stadium.
They are, actually.
Are they really, Spence?
I don't know.
I think they're in great physical shape in that town. Go ahead.
Talk about an owner that's very hands-on, Daniel Snyder.
He's a hands-on. I heard the cheerleaders practices. He is there. You know, he's the man.
He assists.
It's like a Brazilian steakhouse with him, with thumbs up and thumbs down with those cheerleaders.
Oh boy. Oh, we got into some water. We're getting into some hot water, but Andrew, that's why you're here. We're putting you through the ringer here on Rover Sports. But Andrew, I wanted to ask you, so we're going to be probably out the next week. Are you excited about Devontae Smith? And are you probably play fantasy football. You might even know Dr. Lewis's kids. I mean, are you excited for fantasy football? I know that some don't play it around here, but I got to tell you, I love this time of year of fantasy football.
I agree. Right at the start of the year when everyone's starting fantasy football, everyone's very into it while everyone has a clean slate with their team before a couple teams give up when they have a rough start.
We're all junkies with fantasy football. Trust me.
I'm a junkie. I'm known as the Cleveland Browns, though, in my league of fantasy football. But,
not this year, buddy. You're the Rams.
Joshy Dash is
going. Like you like massages or the Cleveland Browns?
What did you say?
Nothing.
But speaking of...
I want to just thank everybody for logging on today. 860, 97.5. We want to thank Andrew Batt for sitting in. Certainly, he's welcome to join us in the future. Hope he had fun. And as always, I want to thank Colin behind the glass and all the Rovers. And as always, good night and good sports.
Great content.